As we head toward Arizona's August primary elections, we're inviting in the candidates running in contested races to talk about why they're running and some of the key issues in their contests.
You know, it's been 24 years since Arizona has had an educator at the helm of the Department of Education.
I am a proud American Muslim woman.
That although our election system is the greatest in the world, it is still far from perfect.
We need more options for our young people, more counselors, more social workers.
Common Core's been repealed by the State Board of Ed, and now we have new standards.
And we know what's possible if we keep moving forward.
The current shortcomings of the office have left our system vulnerable to cyber attacks.
We're gonna fly, fight, and win on Election Day with your help.
Today, Frank Riggs, the former California congressman, is running for superintendent of public instruction, a position currently held by incumbent Diane Douglas. Riggs, a Republican, served in Congress throughout much of the 1990s, where he championed charter schools. In 2014, he made a run for Arizona governor, but lost in the primary. And in between, the Army veteran and former police officer worked as a real estate executive and was the founding board president of Arizona Connections Academy, a statewide online charter school. And he says it's time for a change in our state education department. When I sat down with him yesterday, we started there. Why run for this office and why now?
Because Arizona education's at a critical point, and we need a proven leader in the superintendent's office. And I'm the only candidate for superintendent of public instruction with a proven record of executive, educational, and legislative leadership. And I think you have to have that combination of skills in order to perform the responsibilities of the superintendent in leading the Arizona Department of Education in its core mission, mm-hmm. which is to implement and administer all state and federal programs and policies for K-12 education, but also to manage and to disperse the $10 billion in local, state, and federal funding that we spend on K-12 education in Arizona.
Right. And you are right that you are entering this race at a very critical, high-stakes sort of moment for education in our state, right? We saw 50,000 teachers march on the Capitol a few months ago. We saw the governor approve his 20 by 2020 plan mm-hmm. to try to get some more money into public schools and into teachers' pockets.
Yep.
What do you think about the plan that the governor passed and the broader Red for Ed movement?
Well, I think the governor's plan is a good first step. It's addressing two issues, really, or two challenges. One, teacher compensation has been largely stagnant for a decade, going back to the Great Recession. And secondly, we have an acute and well-documented teacher shortage, 2,000 teaching vacancies. And if we want to recruit and retain the best teachers for Arizona students, we've got to be able to pay them competitively. So what I have proposed is that we index per pupil funding to student enrollment growth and inflation, and that we benchmark teacher compensation against and pay our teachers competitively with neighboring states in the Southwest region. So I don't think the legislation or governor would have acted to extend Prop 301 or to move the 20 by 20 plan, the proposal forward, but for kind of that organic grassroots pressure from Red for Ed. But the flip side of that is I don't think that our teachers should have walked out and gone on strike after the governor made his proposal, but before the legislature could act on it. As a former congressman, I know the legislative and political process takes time. So I really think in walking out and certainly extending Red for Ed into the second week, they did a disservice. I mean, they were acting kind of in bad faith, and I think they did a disservice to a lot of Arizona families with school-age children.
The incumbent superintendent of public instruction, Diane Douglas, mm-hmm. was similarly upset about the walkout. And when I interviewed her at the time, she even talked about punishing some of the teachers who walked out. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. I'm a former elected school board member, school board president. I recognize local control in K-12 education. I don't think that the repercussions serve any purpose. I'd like to focus on a kind of a positive vision going forward. And that's why I've said, look, if we can take these issues out of the realm of hyperpartisanship and simply acknowledge that, yeah, per pupil funding needs to keep pace with student enrollment growth and inflation, and yes, we do need to pay our teachers competitively with neighboring states, mm-hmm. I think that'll be a positive contribution to the debate about the future of K-12 education in our state.
So I want to talk about Invest in Ed then, this mm-hmm. Ballot proposition that would tax the highest earners in the state to put more money into public yep. education. You've said that you oppose that plan. Why?
Ill-advised, very ill-advised, because I think in the long run it'd be counterproductive. I think it would lead to a loss of businesses and jobs. I think it's essentially a tax, and I say this from the perspective of having been a CEO in both the private and nonprofit sectors, mm-hmm. but I think it's actually a tax on entrepreneurial risk-taking, job creation, capital formation, and investment. So I think in the long term, it probably would lead to a decline, not an increase, in state government revenues. You know, for all state government services, including K-12 education, the largest item in the state budget. I don't think that is the way to go.
Okay. But you've said that more money is definitely needed. How would you go about getting that from this state legislature?
We need to call a timeout, a moratorium on further corporate tax cuts. Those were implemented during the recession. They were intended to stimulate the economy. I think they did. They kind of fulfilled their intended purpose. Corporate taxes have been cut. Tax rates at the federal level have been cut 40%. And frankly, I want the business community to do more, to have more skin in the game, because the constant concern or complaint I hear from people, you know, major employers in the state is they cannot get enough educated and qualified job applicants. So that argues to me for them to do more and to make a greater investment in K-12 education.
Let's talk about charter schools and school choice. You've mm-hmm. been very involved in charter schools throughout your career. You yep. authored the Charter School Expansion Act in 1998.
I did.
You were the founding board president of the Arizona Connections Academy,
right.
a statewide online charter school.
Right.
So yep. let's talk about charter school accountability. Would you change any of the regulations that are in place for charter schools right now?
Well, you know, I'm considered to be one of the fathers, I guess, of the charter school movement, in the school choice movement nationally. And I'm distressed when I see a few bad actors give the whole charter school sector a black eye. And, of course, the critics of charter schools seize upon those as examples and attempt to make the case that all charter schools are bad and most charter schools are doing wonderful work. And charter schools originally were intended to be the R&D, the research development arm of K-12 public education, to develop best practices. But there's clearly a need now for, I think, a little closer scrutiny and accountability with respect to charter schools. And I think the way we get that is to require that all charter schools have a majority of independent directors on their governing board, not family, not friends, not business, you know, associates or colleagues, truly independent directors who've had formal training on nonprofit and charter school governance and who understand their legal and fiduciary responsibilities and obligations, both as individual board members and collectively as the charter school governing board.
So what's your stance on this current battle that's going on and that will play out on the November ballot over the empowerment scholarship accounts or school vouchers, many people call them?
On ESAs, my advice behind the scenes was that when we realized that the expansion of ESAs was going to be capped at an additional 30,000 scholarships was to means test that, to give low-income families priority and parity. And by parity, I mean many times they're less mobile than more affluent families, so they need additional assistance to help with transportation if they're going to avail themselves of other school choice options near where they live. I think the ESA expansion is kind of flawed in that regard because it isn't means tested and should be. And secondly, you know, I've heard from a lot of parents that don't like the accountability and testing provision that the legislature added, saying that if you're a private school and you enroll 50 or more ESA-funded students, you have to administer a nationally normed test and then publicly report the aggregate results. Their concern is the obvious, which is that could be the camel's nose and it could lead to greater governmental intervention in and regulation of private schools. And parents, of course, in many cases, have chosen a private school education for their child because they don't want the government regulation, or conversely, they have opted for a sectarian or religious school education for their child rather than a secular traditional public school education for their child.
What do you say to those who argue that this is public money that would be going to public schools that is now being diverted to private schools?
I don't really have a problem with that because, you know, I believe that parents have a fundamental right and responsibility, two sides of the same coin, to choose and direct their child's education. So I think in an ideal world, the taxpayer funding, of course, you know, parents that are choosing some other option for their child are also paying taxes. But I think in an ideal world, that the funding ought to be able to follow the child to the educational model or type of schooling that is chosen by the parent is the best and most appropriate for the child, the student. So I don't really have a problem with that. The bottom line, though, is we first have to assure that our public schools, which are educating a great majority of our students, are adequately funded. You know, that is priority number one.
All right. Frank Riggs, candidate for superintendent of public instruction. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.